The market doesn't joke around, so why would you? Get serious. Choose Tastytrade. Tastytrade gives you the tools you need to make smarter moves. Dig into data with advanced charting, track profit accurately with order chain trackers, see risk clearly with curve analysis, and trade with low-capped commissions, stocks, options, futures, and more. All on one platform. No wonder serious traders choose Tastytrade. Join the club, genius. Tasty Trading is a registered broker-dealer and member of FINRA and SIPC.
I'm Scott Wapner, and you're listening to CNBC's Halftime Report, the podcast, the most profitable hour of the trading day. We record this live weekdays at 12 Eastern. Listen in.
Carl, thanks so much. Welcome to the Halftime Report. I'm Scott Wapner. Front and center this hour, the state of the tech trade. NASDAQ tracking for its sixth down week in the past seven. It's having a bad week. Investment committee debating where all of that goes from here. Netflix numbers are on deck, so this is an important afternoon. Joining me for the hour, Josh Brown, Liz Young, and Jim Labenthal. I'll take you to the markets. We have a nice little bounce today, but we are going to zero in on tech. And NASDAQ's up a little less than 0.5%. So, as I said, Josh, you got this streak down 6 of 7 weeks for the NASDAQ. It's down 3% on the week. And here we have Netflix. And, you know, there are times when it feels like the market needs tech. This feels like one of those times.
Yeah, I would agree. I don't know how much help you're going to get, but if you actually look at some of the pullbacks that we've experienced over the last couple of years, even if they were minor pullbacks, in many cases, big tech earnings reports were the thing that put a stop to those declines. So if you were thinking of like, what is, so we're, I mean, look, we're not really that far off the highs. We're three straight trading days.
4%.
We're three straight trading days below the 50 day, which I think is what's getting people's attention. We've grown very spoiled. We've been up above that short-term moving average pretty consistently all year. So that's getting people's attention. But if you were to make a list of, like, what are the catalysts that could get people interested in again on the buy side, I would say some blowout tech earnings would do the trick. Number one, they're really big index components. Number two, they're highly visible. Everyone's going to know it if and when it happens. And then number three, just spiritually, this is still the leadership group. I know there's been a broadening. I know there have been winners in other sectors. But at the end of the day, they still are the leadership stocks. They're still the generals. We want the generals standing upright on the battlefield, not lying down. So, yeah, I think we need some help from the tech names. I don't know how much we'll get, but definitely you're right about that.
Blizz, you agree with that? Just one of those times in a somewhat unsettled market where we need the biggest stocks within the market and what has been the best trade over a long period of time here to live up to its billing and save the day?
I agree with that. I think the other thing to also remember is that tech is responsible for more than all of the earnings growth that we're expecting in the first quarter from the S&P. So they have to come through in order just to keep the growth number positive. Mm-hmm. Next week is going to be a big week. The thing that would concern me is that if what happened with JP Morgan is any indication, investors have really high expectations. So it's not only that you have to hit your numbers for this quarter, but you have to guide higher than we expected you to guide. And if that doesn't happen, we could have the scenario that Josh is talking about. The expectations are there. You might not get too much out of it. The other thing I'll mention is when you look at what's happened in markets through April, so month to date April, I would call this more rational behavior. We've got yields up, stocks down, and then you look at the stocks that are down. The Mag 7 isn't down as much as the AI stocks, and we have some overlap there, but not down as much. So the things that had gone up so fiercely, obviously giving some back, small caps down dramatically, it's investors still want cash-generating stocks, and they want stuff that is tried and true. It's saved them before. It's done well in their portfolios before, and we're practicing muscle memory.
You know, you hit a great point, Jim, does Liz, where, you know, Barclays also notes the fact that estimates are drifting lower for earnings, that the upside is reliant on tech. So we're next week, really. I mean, Netflix, okay, it starts the growthy earnings names coming through, but next week it starts to get real. And, you know, Tesla's early in the week, but then you have Wednesday and Thursday. It's real. It's Meta, it's Alphabet, it's Microsoft. You're going to have to wait till Amazon to the 30th. You're not waiting for that report, though, because you bought more Amazon.
Bought more Amazon.
Let's talk about why.
Well, first off, it's a relatively new position. I took a toehold about a couple of months ago, and I wanted to add to it. In this recent pullback, I think Amazon has held in there very well. And let's not forget that for the last 3 years, it actually has underperformed the market by a meaningful amount. Recently, it broke out to a new all-time high. By the way, during that 3 years, the financial performance, the operational performance of the company has been fabulous. I don't see that ending. If you either look at Amazon Web Services or the retail part of the business, they're going to continue to fire on all cylinders. Some people may say, well, at 40 times forward earnings, is this really true to your kind of value discipline? To which I say yes, for two reasons. One of which, I think there's a pretty good likelihood on the strength of the economy that the estimates are too low for Amazon. And number two, you really have to normalize Amazon's earnings for what if they just stopped building? I mean, they shouldn't. But what if they stopped investing in the future and just operated what they had right now? Their expenses would go down, their earnings would go up. I think this is obviously a bellwether for the overall S&P 500. And after a pretty much flat return for 3 years, I'm comfortable getting in.
I mean, flat for 3 years, but at a, you know, recent new all-time high.
And that gives me comfort.
The stock has started working again.
Exactly.
You use the word comfort. You feel comfortable buying it at the time where it's around an all-time high in what feels like a somewhat newly unsettled tape.
Newly unsettled tape, I would agree. I think that newly unsettled tape will settle down.
Especially
probably
in the NASDAQ, right? We said it's down about 3% on
sure.
the week, and many of the names within it are down 3%. Some are down sure. more than others, like Apple, of course.
Yeah.
But, you know, you get the point here.
I do get the point. Newly unsettled tape, I like that expression. I don't think that will last. I think things will settle down, basically because the economy is going so strong, Scott. We did get those, you know, initial jobless claims, Philly Fed, et cetera. We see where Atlanta Fed GDP is. What would worry me on Amazon, or anything, frankly, is if we had to go back to that discussion of a recession, which I just don't see happening. It's just not, it shouldn't be in our conversation right now. It's not in my conversation.
Right. So, I mean, next week is going to get real, as I said, for stocks that the majority of the committee owns in bulk, right? I mean, Microsoft and Meta, Alphabet, you've got Alphabet. You have some other positioning within this space, too. Are you concerned at all about the way that these stocks have traded of late at a time where I think the broadening trade is going to be questioned because of the backup in rates?
No, I'm not really concerned about the way they've been trading. I think obviously the sore spot for most of us has been what we've seen with Apple. The good news is the expectations are not high for Apple. There are some big fundamental questions that I think will come out during the Q&A and the prepared remarks that have nothing to do with this quarter's numbers and everything to do with how management feels about these open questions. And we're talking about stuff like China. We're talking about stuff like reacceleration of growth possibly coming from the services side. It's just going to remain a tough stock. The others, though, I think all look great. Like Meta looks fantastic technically. Obviously, the fundamentals are hitting on all cylinders. Alphabet, even though in the news flow, they continue to be embarrassed by some of the actions of the employees. Outside of that, the fundamentals are terrific. And even when you think about Microsoft, there's not that much going on there in the headlines, but the stock looks great. So I'm not worried about the theme. I think these stocks will hold up well. But look, in every quarter, one of them shocks everybody. Maybe it's going to be Tesla this time again. I don't know. But I feel, just generally speaking, investors are still going to run for those stocks every opportunity they get.
I really, Jim, want to see your Microsoft next Thursday. I feel, as by the way, the price target gets trimmed today slightly at Citi. They reiterate the buy. That's more important. But the target goes to 475 from 480. And they're adjusting their estimates, they say, because of some slight FX headwinds. But this is a stock that's gotten a lot of the benefit of the doubt. You know, this first mover advantage, so to speak, where, you know, they had this OpenAI investment. It catapulted the AI trade into the lexicon, and we've talked about it probably every single day in some respects since that happened. NVIDIA has its own place, but I feel like Microsoft, they need to, I want to see what they deliver this quarter. You know what I'm saying? We've given them the benefit of the doubt. Let's get some meat, some more meat on the bone.
So humor me for a second. You like to ask us questions. I just want to know, are you skeptical, or are you saying there's a hidden gem here?
No, not really. I just noted, I don't know, a couple weeks ago that if you, you know, it was Microsoft was crushing everybody, and Alphabet was the one who missed the boat. And then I noted over the last 12 months, the stock performance between the two was neck and neck.
Sorry, yeah. a hidden gem. It's the largest market cap in the world.
Okay.
It's 37 times our
okay. Okay, but
the gem has been unhidden.
So here's why
fully
I was,
out in the open.
Here's
gem.
Why I was asking that way, just in terms of let me rephrase it.
I
actually just wanted your opinion because I don't know if we're going higher or lower, Scott, at Microsoft. I don't know.
He doesn't either.
Well, you know, but he could have. Roughly 35 times forward earnings. PEG ratio, which is, of course, you know, what guys like me think about is that 35 times fairly priced? Look, on NVIDIA, the PEG ratio is 1.1 at roughly 35 times forward earnings. That's fairly priced. Microsoft, the PEG ratio, price to earnings over growth of earnings, is 2.3. That's a little high. Is it nosebleed? No, we're going to, you know, look, I'm not going to worry about FX. You brought that up and, or, you know, the analyst did. PEG ratio is high, but it's not egregiously high. I just don't know where it goes
from
here.
I think a lot. You're not going to hate on Microsoft's valuation
and
wax poetic about Amazon.
What's the biggest risk? What's the biggest
44 times forward, all right?
Well, but wait a second. PEG ratio on Amazon is about 1.2. So, look, I'm not hating on Microsoft. What I'm saying is I'm not adding to Microsoft today. I'm adding to Amazon. By the way, NVIDIA is looking tempting to add to.
What's the biggest risk in the Microsoft quarter? What's the worst thing they could give an indication?
Well, I mean, the worst risk is what? That there's some
actually. I was just going to say.
Jim says no
social media is ablaze right now when he said there's no risk.
My question, here's what I'm asking.
Jim Labenthal
said asking.
That. If, not me, not Josh, not Liz.
Because if I'm trading the stock ahead of the quarter, what I'm worried about, and I'm not, what I would be worried about is the commercialization effort of OpenAI is going slower than what the market is hoping for.
Fine. How about if I agree with you that is actually maybe even likely?
It's too late. You already said otherwise.
Well, you already said there was no risk. That would be a major problem.
Well, okay, but this is where
we differ. That goes to my benefit of the doubt comment.
This is where we differ. I don't think it's major. I don't think that's something that if that happens, Josh, that people wake up in the morning and say, this is a crummy stock, man. I want to get rid of Microsoft. Who the heck owns this?
Don't you think that we've talked about sort of looking down the AI highway and saying, okay, there are very few companies who seem to be monetizing it now. NVIDIA, Microsoft, we put at the top of that list as well. So if Josh's point comes to fruition and they're monetizing it less than the market had expected,
look, I apologize. I didn't mean to appear blasé, but here's what I'm saying. Let me be more specific. Thank you. The forward multiple is 32. I mean, let's not get freaked out. Where's Super Micro? You want to talk about something where there might be some risk to the downside? Microsoft, look, it's not just AI. You've got, obviously, the Windows franchise. You've got the gaming. You've got Azure, everything.
Yeah, I know.
I don't want to talk out of both sides of my mouth, but I need to reiterate, I'm not buying Microsoft today. I'm buying Amazon. I'm buying something else that we'll get to in a second.
All right.
So I'm not coming out here saying this is the greatest thing since Josh Brown.
That's fair.
And that's a pretty high hurdle.
Speaking of Josh Brown, Alphabet price target. Price target gets raised at Bernstein ahead of earnings today.
Alphabet and Meta.
I come to you on Alphabet because you own it. Alphabet goes to 165 from 160. Been vocal. They say that the AI doomsday fears are overdone. But while recent investor confidence has ticked up, it's impossible to dismiss the terminal risk.
Yeah. So Google's large language model is not great, but neither is anyone else's. So that whole fear about Alphabet being behind is now laughable. Now that in the real world, these LLMs have been out there, people are using them, they're building layers above them, they're incorporating them into existing software. We see it every day in financial services. We know it's happening in every vertical. There is no real advantage yet that's materialized. So that fairy tale about how Google is like not a player here or whatever, or they're too far behind to catch up, obviously is untrue. The key thing to keep in mind here, every one of the FANG names, every one of the Mag 7 names has an advertising business, all of them pretty much, maybe with the exception of NVIDIA. But the advertising business at Alphabet is the business. I know they have an airplane hangar in California where they're attempting time travel, but 97% of this company's revenue is ad revenue. And you can see that in the share price of Meta and Alphabet, which are leading the market, and why the ad market is doing great. It's a huge change versus 2022 and early 23. A lot of the uncertainty around ad spend has gone away, and they have resumed taking share from traditional advertising platforms like print, like television, no offense. And that is what the street is going to value the stock on. That's what they can actually deliver on. And the AI stuff is important, but it's not really going to disrupt the current ad story today.
Kind of like Windows for Microsoft.
I'm on Windows right now.
Why are we talking about Windows? What year is this?
Can we talk about, let's talk about Tesla as well today, because the stock did hit a new 52-week low. You know, look, some have removed it from the Mag 7, and the performance of the stock is probably justifiable that that's been done. It's down for its fifth straight day. We, of course, had a big debate on that stock yesterday with Brin and Weiss, you know, one long, one short. Take a listen.
The fundamentals deteriorating. We've hit limit in terms of the EV adoption. They've got the oldest EV lineup in the industry globally. They've got 20% of their revenues coming from China. We've seen what China has done, okay? We've seen Apple move their supply chain to India. And they've got better relationships and longer standing relationships with the Chinese government. We've seen China. China is supporting their domestic producers that, by the way, make newer, more richer in terms of the accessories, in terms of you know, basically even you know the range, so of their cars than Tesla. That's number two. Number three. We've seen Elon just tweet out, "Oh, no more prices. We're raising prices." He lied. They're cutting prices.
What I wouldn't discount is Elon, is I think he's one of the most prolific innovators and engineers of our time. With SpaceX, literally, I think NASA would be defunded with what he's done with energy storage and EVs, and then at Neuralink. Make no mistake, part of this valuation is based on sentiment and also valuations, margins, and earnings expanding. So I see absolutely why Steve is short. I don't think he's going to be short long term. I think it's probably a trade, but I think longer time, we will get some clarity. And this will be, over the next few months, a potentially good opportunity to add or buy to the position.
All right, that's Brennan Weiss with differing views, obviously. This resonated. The social engagement we got on this debate was
viral.
The top.
We live for moments like this.
That's why I wanted you guys to weigh in, as Deutsche Bank today downgrades it to hold. They cut the target to 123 from 189. This is from a formerly very bullish analyst. And they say earnings are going to be under pressure and free cash flow will be as well. Do you have a take on this situation?
So the stock, even after everything it's gone through in the last year, in a 60% drawdown-ish, it's still up 770% over 5 years. And I am maybe the worst person to offer a take because I never owned it. I missed the entire run higher. I just never understood it. I never understood why it was so popular. I understand the appeal of him. I understand it's not a car company, blah, blah, blah. It's electrical, whatever. I get all that. I'm not stupid. But I missed it. I was wrong. Just because it's now in a 60% drawdown, though, I don't really change my mind. As to being short, I know Weiss's finger is on the trigger. He's watching it all day. That's great. For most people, shorting Tesla, historically, it's like never fight a land war in Asia. Like, it's just like one of those unwritten rules. You just don't do it because of how quickly you can get your face ripped off if he sends the wrong tweet that people get excited about. So, like, I'm not a great authority on the stock in either direction. I do think being short the stock is playing with fire. I also don't think I want to be long the name, given all of the drama surrounding it.
Jimmy?
I'm just going to go to the fundamental analysis here. You just hit it, Josh, that people say this is not a car company. And quite often they point to things like full self-driving FSD. Now, I know this is not going to make me friends with the Tesla crowd, but it is just a car company. And full self-driving is just like any other innovation that has ever come out of the automotive industry. I don't care whether it's fuel injections or airbags. Somebody initiates it, a company starts it, and then other companies follow. That has been the story with Tesla, including the whole electric vehicle market. They had the space to themselves. Now there's competition, both in electrical vehicles and also full self-driving.
And you're trending. Good luck.
But then you summarize this, and what you've got is a company, the last thing that the aficionados have said is, look at the margins on Tesla. They've been Ferrari-like. It's true. They have been Ferrari-like, and now they're coming down, and the estimates are coming down, and they're locked into a price war. That's not where you want to have a 45 times multiple.
So if you look at just EV as a theme, if we pull this out broadly, I think a lot of what is happening in EV now is what we need to keep in mind, take notes for what might happen in AI going forward. The EV theme, everybody was so enthusiastic about it, it was going to change the car industry entirely. And it got too enthusiastic. And now we're pulling back. It's not as popular. You even have normal traditional car companies having trouble unloading their version of EVs. So the demand isn't quite there. Look at lithium prices this year, down dramatically compared to an environment where all of commodities are up. So the demand just hasn't come through yet. We pulled it forward way too much. Tesla was the company that was supposed to be the leader, the innovator, and now it's feeling some of that pain.
Yeah, I mean, that may be true for, you know, certain names that have gotten an AI bubble or AI umbrella bump.
Yep.
But not necessarily for the biggest players like the Microsofts and the NVIDIAs and the Alphabets.
Selling software is
even
so
Meta,
much
by the way,
than
which,
selling
which,
cars.
Even Meta, by the way, which has some headlines out regarding its latest version of its large language model. And the stock's up nearly 3%. We're going to have more on this coming up in just a few minutes. But it goes to the point we were talking about earlier about the arms race that's taking place. Those who think they have a leadership role and the way that the market has perceived who is in the advanced stages of monetization and are rewarding them as such.
Dude, if we had a debate in 1998, 1 year into the internet, who's in the lead, our candidates would have been Lycos, Excite, Ask Jeeves, and At Home. Like, we would have been literally debating, like, who has the most eyeballs now? Who has the better? And Google comes public in 2004. Nobody talks about anything that took place between now. And so I don't think it's going to be some company no one's ever heard of because of how expensive it is to just get into the business. It's like a $100 billion table stake. So I get that. It's going to be one of the companies we talk about. It's just too soon to crown anybody. And I think you're seeing that reflected on Wall Street, where every month we decide it's somebody else. Maybe today it's Meta. But so I like that, though, for investing. I like that it's murky and unclear, and we don't already know, and we don't have a stock selling at 500 times earnings because they definitively won.
So we're going to have more, as I said, on that in just a moment, because it's developing into an interesting story today, and we don't want to let it go. We could have had perhaps, you know, some other stocks as our chart of the day. We chose Taiwan Semi today because there's been, you know, after ASML, there's been a lot of talk this week about what's going to happen with what has been one of the best trades in the market, clearly, and that's the semis. Well, Taiwan Semi today is falling on earnings. There's some news on Micron. It does lead us to NVIDIA as well, which gets reiterated as its top pick, Josh, with a $1,100 target at Cowen. And that stock's been in correction territory, too. Do we need to worry about some of these chip stocks, which month to date, Intel's down near 20%, AMD's off 13.5%, onsemi's 13.5% to the downside, NXP's weak, Skyworks, ASML, as I just mentioned, Lam Research, and then NVIDIA. So these stocks, you know, I don't know if it's a full trend reversal. You would look at those charts and be able to decipher that better than me, but how do you look at what's happening in this space?
No, these are falling knives right now, and NVIDIA is probably holding up better than most of the names in the group that I follow. Taiwan Semi is 60% of global foundry revenue. There is no company doing anything in chips that doesn't deal with them in some way, shape, or form. So if you're not paying attention to what they're telling you, I don't know what you're looking at. Here's what they're telling you. They lowered expectations for chip growth in 2024. They cited macroeconomic and geopolitical uncertainties as though there is never, you know, those things. But though they think that those things are weighing on end market demand. You need to remember, every semiconductor company is cyclical in the end. That's number one. You might not believe there's a cycle anymore at some point. The reality will catch up and say, oh yeah, no, there still is a cycle. That's one. Two, end market demand is all that matters, and frequently, chip companies will be the last to know. they'll be the last to know. They'll find out later than some of the other companies that are the consumers of their chips. So that's what we're dealing with here. They are echoing some of the same things we heard from ASML. How many more companies this important do you need to hear from to understand that maybe the expectations got ahead of the reality?
If you, Jim, you know, you look at these chips and you say, okay, it's the more perhaps industrial ones that maybe need to keep an eye on more so than some of these AR-related ones. Onsemi, NXP, as I mentioned, 13.5% and 10% respectively to the downside month to date.
Mm-hmm. I think, I'm sorry.
And you have NXP, right?
I have NXP. I did trim that recently, also trimmed NVIDIA, albeit lower than it is now. But the point, and I think I'm going to echo what Josh said, which is that expectations got ahead of themselves. Now, if you want to just focus on the industrial, Scott, you know, NXP rallied up to 260. And what was that all about? That was about rebuilding auto inventory after the auto strike last fall. And you can look at Qualcomm as another example. And what I'm saying here is these are not fatal conditions. These are small pullbacks. They're going to last for a little while. But with the economic cycle going where it is right now, they should resume a growth trend. And I don't think it's going to take too long. But yes, they got ahead of themselves. Qualcomm, just for example, as much as it's doing what it's doing in automotive and Internet of Things to diversify, it still is beholden to the smartphone market. The expectations there for the smartphone upgrade cycle probably are a little ahead of themselves. Now, I want to make this point very clear. This is not a time, in my opinion, to go sell Qualcomm, NXP, NVIDIA, any of these things. I trimmed those a few weeks ago, but this is a time to just sit tight and let this part of the cycle happen. It may last a quarter, and then let the economic growth, which we're seeing in the U.S., which is likely to transfer to the rest of the globe, take over through the rest of 24.
Can I ask you a question? Taiwan had 40% net profit margins, which is the highest in the company's history. Doesn't that seem peakish to you? Given the amount of investment we know they're all going to have to make, doesn't that seem like as good as it gets?
Yes, but that doesn't really worry me, Josh, because I think what you're going to see here is whether it's the reshoring of the whole supply chain or just economic growth that I was just talking about, that these volumes are going to pick up.
And by the way, it's not just semis, Liz. It's since the S&P's record high on March 28th, which may feel like an eternity ago to some people relative to where, you know, volatility has picked up of late. Software is also down 6% since the S&P peak. I could go through a number of other sectors away from tech that are down more, but nonetheless, do we need to worry about under the surface names within tech, not just the mega caps?
Well, I think this part of the cycle, and I said this on Closing Bell a couple of weeks ago, that if we do have a sell-off that actually picks up steam, I think what happens first is the broadening out trade goes, right? People that had bought things on the premise that we're broadening out, it's because the economy is expanding, everything can participate. And that largely has happened. Small caps have taken it hard. When you look at semiconductors, if we're talking about it from a cyclicality perspective, you have to also compare them to the trends in software. And software has underperformed semis on a trailing one-month basis, but mm-hmm. that gap has narrowed recently. But when I say recently, I mean in the last, 4 days. This is not yet something where the trend has reversed and suddenly software is outperforming. So I'm a little bit more optimistic, or maybe I'll say a little less pessimistic than Josh. I don't know that they're falling knives, but they are sending a signal that cyclicality is challenged.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. Oh, we are going to come back. We will have more news regarding these Meta headlines, which are very interesting. We'll do our calls of the day as well. Don't go anywhere.
Are you following the Halftime Report podcast? What are you waiting for? Look for us in your favorite podcasting app. Follow the Halftime Podcast now.
At the UPS Store, we know things can get busy this upcoming holiday. You can count on us to be open and ready to help with any packing and shipping or anything else you might need.
Is there anything you can't do?
Actually, I don't have a good singing voice. The UPS... Nope. But our certified packing experts can pack and ship just about anything.
At least that's good.
The UPS Store. Be unstoppable. Most locations are independently owned. Product, services, pricing, and hours of operation may vary. See center for details. Come in today to get your holiday goodies there on time.
At Capella University, you'll get support from people who care about your success. From before you enroll to after you graduate. Pursue your goals knowing help is available when you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.
We'll be right back.
All right, we're back. We do have more news now on Meta. You see the stock moving higher by more than 3%. Let's go to Steve Kovac, who has this news, which is really about the next frontier, Steve, of these large language models, and that is image generation, as we've heard from some others, and now we hear from Meta. What do we know?
Yeah, that's part of the Meta thing. By the way, this is their new large language model, Scott. They're calling it Llama 3, which is, of course, sequel to Llama 2. Two really important things to know about this, Scott. First of all, it's immediately going to be deployed to billions of users who use Facebook's apps, whether that's the regular Facebook app, the WhatsApp, Instagram, and so forth. So right away, huge user base for this new Meta AI product. On top of that, there's a new relationship with Google here. Previously, they've already have a relationship with Bing, but when you ask Meta AI a question that might need to search the web or crawl the web for the exact right answer, it will either credit Google or credit Bing as the source of that. I asked Meta, you know, what the nature of that relationship is, who's paying who, basically. They wouldn't tell me that, but it is also kind of a boost here for Google search and Bing search being tapped by the large language model made by Meta in order to get you those right answers, Scott.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Steve Kovac, thank you very much for that interesting news moving those stocks. Exactly what we were talking about earlier.
Yeah, 100%. And the open source nature of this is very different from the walled gardens that so many of these large tech giants have historically built. I think it's the smart route. I think you just want mass adoption at this stage, and then you want to take all of that usership and analyze what are people really doing with these products and with these features, and how do we build upon that? So I think we're in the stage where no one's gonna own it because no one really seems to be trying to own it. They seem to just wanna get as many people using it as possible. Maybe the products where we get more competitive come in the next wave. But I think this is a really interesting announcement, and I absolutely think you're going to see a ton of notes on this by tomorrow morning.
Yeah, we'll follow those stocks, of course, for the remainder of the session today. Let's get the headlines now with Kate Rogers. Hi, Kate.
Hey there, Scott. We're now down to five jurors on Donald Trump's hush money trial after the judge ruled to dismiss juror number four. The judge questioned the juror after he arrived late to court. Prosecutors raised concerns that the juror may have lied on his past arrest history on the questionnaire. Top officials from the U.S. and Israel will meet today on the possible operation in Rafah. That's according to NBC News, citing two U.S. officials. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan expected to chair the virtual meeting, a follow-up on a meeting from April 1st, where U.S. officials said Israel's plan addressing humanitarian concerns around the operation were unrealistic. President Biden is not expected to attend. And the UN Security Council is expected to vote later today on a draft resolution that would give the Palestinian Authority full member status at the United Nations. Currently, it holds a permanent observer status. However, the U.S. holds veto power on the council and could use it when the resolution comes to a vote. Scott, back over to you.
All right, Kate, I appreciate that. Thank you. Kate Rogers coming up, hunting for yield with rates higher for longer. We have your dividend playbook with some key stocks to consider right now. The committee debates them next with a special guest. Halftime's back after this.
At the UPS Store, we know things can get busy this upcoming holiday. You can count on us to be open and ready to help with any packing and shipping or anything else you might need.
Is there anything you can't do?
Actually, I don't have a good singing voice. The UPS... Nope. But our certified packing experts can pack and ship just about anything.
At least that's good.
The UPS Store. Be unstoppable. Most locations are independently owned. Product, services, pricing, and hours of operation may vary. See center for details. Come in today to get your holiday goodies there on time.
All right, welcome back. Our next guest looking for stocks that can grow their dividends in a higher rate environment. And he is putting money to work in two new buys. Joining us now, Post Nine's Matt Powers of Powered Advisory Group. Welcome back to Post Nine. It's good to
Thanks,
see you
Matt.
Again.
Yeah. Glad to be here.
Well, this is a pertinent conversation given the backup in rates, right? I'm sure you're thinking about this a lot. And if you're looking for dividend growers, the so-called aristocrats are down 5% month to date on fears of backed up rates for a longer period of time. How are you thinking about that?
Yeah, no doubt it's a headwind for dividend growth stocks. I mean, I think we can all agree on that. You know, it's It doesn't impact our strategy. It does not change how we're investing. It just, I think any dividend growth investor is going to realize it's going to require a lot more patience just moving forward.
Yeah. Do you think it's going to impact performance of you know, money managers or fund managers who are explicitly looking for stocks like this if rates remain higher for a longer period of time than we first thought?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it, just from our perspective, our end, when we are in kind of getting this out there, our lean, we focus more on dividend growers, less on high yield. So we're not looking for a bond alternative or a fixed income alternative. We're looking more at growth. So it's total return is what we're after.
Okay, so recent buys, let's highlight a couple of them. MasterCard is one. It offers a, you know, I think what most people would say is a small yield, not even a 1% dividend, but they have grown their dividend over a period of time, which qualifies them for the kinds of stock you look for. Tell us why this one particularly stands out.
So normally we're looking for a 2% yield on the stocks, but MasterCard's at 0.54%, and it's staggering. Over the past 10 years, they've grown the dividend 27% a year over the past 10 years. So that's anything that is growing at that rate eventually, obviously, is going to catch up. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's one part. The other part, too, that's kind of missed in this entire equation is the payout ratio. So that's the percentage of earnings that is being paid out in the form of a dividend. MasterCard, 19%, 20%, roughly, somewhere in there, which means they've got a lot of space to grow.
Okay. Hershey?
Hershey.
2.6 yield. Why this one?
Cocoa prices. So over the past...
We just showed those on the network within the last hour.
Oh, seriously?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
So over the past year, hopefully I'm quoting this right, is somewhere roughly around 250% year over year. So I think a lot of that comes from supply, Africa, some issues with weather. But, you know, Hershey is a great dividend payer. Was not on our radar before, but as the price has moved down, I think the price is down about 27% over the past year. Yield has went up and it hit our radar, and they've got we look for a 10-year track record of dividend growth.
How are you thinking about dividend growers here?
So what's different from your strategy versus buying the dividend aristocrats as kind of like a smart beta factor-driven strategy? What are you doing qualitatively that doesn't get captured in something quantitative like that?
So aristocrats is a 25-year period, and that gets stretched out so long. That's such an extended period. We look at 10-year on the dividend growth side. I mean, that's the simple answer to it.
So you'll pick up on stocks before they become aristocrats?
Correct.
Interesting point. Mm-hmm. Others that are part of your buys recently, Lockheed, right? Starbucks, McDonald's. You want to talk about any of those?
Sure.
Why they stood out?
Yeah, so Lockheed, purely a geopolitical play. You know, with the tensions in Iran, Israel. It's a long-time holding, one of our original holdings on our books. Loved it ever since. It's got a great dividend growth rate track record. I mean, performance has been great over the past decade, but purely a geopolitical play.
What about McDonald's?
So you can almost, I mean, I don't know if it's okay to, but Starbucks, McDonald's, almost lump them into the same group. You know, they're both kind of kings of the fast food industry. They're both down. I mean, stock price is depressed, you know, year to date, and really not a great reason as to why. So their valuation looks excellent, and they fit that dividend growth rate perfectly.
All right, you keep us up to date on what moves you're making. It's good to see you again.
I'll do that. Yeah, thank you.
Right,
thank you very much.
Joining us here at Post 9. Coming up, a pop for D.R. Horton today on strong earnings and guidance, and committee member Stephanie Link. Well, she bought the stock last month. She has a trade update. She's going to join us next. Take a look at D.R. Horton today. Stock's up about 2.25%. And that's after topping estimates, raising its outlook as well. Committee member Stephanie Link, she owns it, and she joins us now with a trade update. So tell us what you're doing with the stock today, Steph.
So I am adding to it. I think the stock actually should be. I'm sorry, I'm hearing a little bit of feedback here. I think the stock should be up more than just 2.5%. And this is a company that just delivered 14% earnings growth, 15% total revenue growth, unit closings up 15%, and their orders were up 46% sequentially. And gross margins were also very good. They raised the guidance, as you mentioned. And I think the important piece here is that 57% of the homes that were bought in the quarter were first-time buyers, and that is where I am very bullish on, because I know we know that there, we are 5 million homes short in this country. We know we have 5 million millennials that are first-home buyers, and we are seeing that come to fruition. I also like the mix. 51% of their revenues is in the southeast and south central part of the country. So I like that a lot. And at 11 times forward estimates, I think the stock is awfully cheap.
No worries about higher rates.
I do worry about higher rates, and I think that's one of the reasons why the stock's not up more. But I do think that the dynamics that they offer in terms of that first-time buyer, that's where I want to have exposure, and that plays right into D.R. Horton. So it may struggle here a little bit in the short term, but I think over the long term, I mean, I think housing is a 10-year theme, and so on any pullbacks, I'm a buyer.
Okay, and you also bought more LVS, Las Vegas Sands. Why did you do that?
Yeah, I mean, the stock down 8%, I think, is a little overdone. It was a disappointing quarter. I mean, they came in line, but the mix was a surprise. So Macau, which is 63% of EBITDA, that actually disappointed. A lot of that had to do with CapEx and renovations that were a surprise. So they disappointed and they lost some market share. That being said, they still have 27% market share in Macau, and I like that region very much. And then Singapore actually delivered very good numbers. They beat on expectations, and they're benefiting from all the renovations that they've done. So I just think at this stock also trading at 11 times versus its 13 times historic, I just think, you know, if numbers are going to come down because of Macau, they're coming down by like 1-2%. I think the stock down 8%, it's a buy.
Yeah, worst day in about 18 months for that stock.
Yeah.
You still own Wynn, Jimmy?
I do still own Wynn. Frustrating.
He says reluctantly, I think.
No, the reluctance, the frustration, and Stephanie, I get it. I mean, operational results at Wynn are fabulous, and the stock continues to be lackluster. And, you know, Las Vegas Sands down 8% today. I get it. Two quarters ago, Wynn reported a blowout quarter on every metric and was down 9%. It's just part of the story right now. This higher interest rate regime is making people think that maybe the recession's closer. Maybe people aren't going to gamble as much. I don't think that's the case at all. So stick with it, Steph.
Steph, briefly, last word.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think I love Wynn. I've owned it in the past as well. But Las Vegas Sands is actually cheaper, and it's a pure play on Macau and Singapore, whereas Wynn, they have also domestic operations. And I know, Jimmy, you like it for the diversification, and they've done a good job as well. So I like them both.
Steph, appreciate you coming on with the update. That's Stephanie Link.
Thanks, Scott.
All right, we'll see you soon. Mike Santoli next with his Midday Word. IPO update for you. Ibotta, open for business. There you go, with a nice move, too, about 27%. Price at 88, opened at 117. And we'll continue to watch that stock throughout the rest of this day. The latest IPO on the floor of the New York Stock Exchange. Our senior markets commentator, Mike Santoli, is here at Post 9. All right, so what? We got down to yesterday to, what, 5,007-ish,
yeah,
around there. Had a nice little bounce off that.
Yeah.
Still feels a little uneasy.
Yeah, and the bounce didn't really get up to yesterday's high. So, I mean, whoever, you know, feels like it's safe to sell every rally is probably going to have to be disabused of that by something a little more forceful. We're down like 250 S&P points in 3 weeks. You were up like 25 at the highs today. So it shows you that we're still kind of convalescing in here. Pressure's been taken off a little bit by the fact that yields aren't making new highs, but they're pretty close. So I think we're still in the same dynamic of trying to gauge if anything really has changed about the trajectory for the economy with yields up here. I am very fixated on some of the cyclical parts of the market. So consumer discretionary, equal weighted, has flagged a little bit. Industrials have done better. Transports, we know, had been a little bit ugly. So you want to just try to read the message in the macro, aside from just, hey, we needed a pullback. We got a 4% pullback. Maybe it goes a little deeper. No big deal. In a bull market, usually there are opportunities to buy, but we haven't quite seen a big flush yet.
Let's see what, you know, Netflix delivers today, just as an entree into the growth stock earnings reports.
That's what it represents, I think. And that is where all the push is in terms of earnings revisions and all the rest of it. So almost regardless of how Netflix itself trades on a reflex, it opens up that moment when it's like, you know, can we believe the published numbers? Can we get some guidance that is anything but consumer demand remains soft and we're being conservative about the rest of the year, which has been, I think, the mantra for a lot of companies so far.
All right, we'll see you in the final stretch on Closing Bell. It's Mike Santoli, our senior markets commentator. We'll step away. We'll come back with finals next. Boy, do we have a big interview coming up on Closing Bell today. BlackRock's Rick Rieder will join us live today. So much to talk to him about, obviously the backup in rates and where this market might be going from here. So please don't miss that. I'll see you at 3 o'clock with Mr. Rieder. Okay, let's do final trades. Farmer Jim.
Delta. I mean, you're hearing all this good stuff from Delta, Alaska Airlines, United Airlines, and you can look at TSA counts and see that people are traveling.
Yeah, well, United was a huge winner yesterday.
Yeah.
Liz Young.
That backup in yields has me talking about short-term treasuries again.
Again?
Again. I'm back at it. As long as we're still talking about cuts later, not never, this could be a good buying opportunity.
All right. Thank you for that. And finally, Josh Brown.
IOT initiated coverage at Loop Capital today with a $42 target. I am long the name. I think it's a really interesting story.
All right. I'll carry through the final stretch today, and it's going to be interesting because the market's losing some steam as we speak. I'll send it to the exchange.
You've been listening to CNBC's Halftime Report, the podcast. You can always catch us live weekdays at 12 Eastern, only on CNBC.
All opinions expressed by the Halftime Report participants are solely their opinions and do not reflect the opinions of CNBC, NBC Universal, their parent company, or affiliates, and may have been previously disseminated by them on television, radio, internet, or another medium. You should not treat any opinion expressed on this podcast as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of an opinion. Such opinions are based upon information the Halftime Report participants consider reliable, but neither CNBC nor its affiliates and/or subsidiaries warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such. To view the full Halftime Report disclaimer, please visit cnbc.com/halftime-report-disclaimer.
You seek the key, but first, you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is their most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today.